the third generation graduate of Washington University School of Medicine. He's here for the 50th reunion of his class, the class of 1933.
Well, it was convenient when I came back this time to bring back my grandfather's diploma from the Medical College of the City of St. Louis as the Latin scholar translated it.
What was your grandfather's name?
And that's James, grandfather James Stevens Penn, who was in the class of 1858 as a graduate. And he was, his preceptor was my great-grandfather, Dr. George Penn, who was also a trustee of the Medical College of the City of St. Louis.
And what was, what years was he trustee, do you remember?
Well, according to the catalogs, as in the archives here, he was in the years of 1856 to and including 1860.
Uh-huh.
And the, I believe, our catalogs carrying are omitted, and the school file are omitted for the, during the war years.
The Civil War years?
War between the states.
Yes. Okay, war between the states.
Yeah.
I stand corrected.
And later on, there is a Dr. William Penn in, as a preceptor and on the board, I believe it was in the years of 1879 and 80. And I, as the best of my knowledge, he was a grandson of Dr. George Penn. So he would be a cousin of my my father.
A cousin of your father?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was attacked in the school, but he was not a graduate. The occasion to bring the beings, I am the first grandson of James Stevens Penn, who became an MD. I was entrusted with the safekeeping of his diploma.
Uh-huh.
And it has been, it had been abused through the years, but it, while it was in my custody since 1927, I've kept it in a safe deposit box. And it has not deteriorated. And with considerable effort and persistence, I had it restored to its original condition by the Huntington Museum
in
Pasadena, California, and had it, the Latin translated by a professor of Latin at St. Mary's College in Brother Theophane, T-H-E-O-P-H-A-N-E,
right.
In the Latin department of that college.
And you brought that here?
Well, I brought it, now I've had a reproduction, and I was thought that it should be in the archives of Washington University.
That was the big poster size diploma, right?
Yes, that diploma is 22, by actual measurement, is 22 and a half by 27 and a half inches. All in Latin, even the name James is spelled J-A-C-O-B-U-M.
Jacobum. Yes.
It's, so it's very, it is my intention to give the original to the custody of my younger sister's son. His name's Nicholas Penn Bernier, B-E-R-N-I-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
When I can't take care of it any longer.
Is he going into medicine, do you
he
know?
He is a practicing physician.
He is a practicing physician.
The American Academy of Family Physicians in Brainerd, Minnesota.
Wonderful country up in Brainerd, Minnesota.
Yeah,
love it.
So,
so was your father a physician?
No, my father wasn't.
But your grandfather
My grandfather, as I understand, he was killed in a horse and buggy accident in 1880 when he was making a call at night in his practice in Creve-Coeur, Missouri. You know,
sure, I'm just called Creve-Coeur. C-R-E-V-E-C-O-U-R.
And
so he was in practice here in St. Louis County.
County. Yeah.
And back in the horse and buggy days.
Sure, it was in 1880.
Yeah.
So that's it's no, nothing particularly illustrious in the career, just by accident that I got a hold of it at home and thought it would be a good time to bring it here.
Yes. How, who gave you the diploma?
My father's oldest brother, eldest son. And he was an attorney. And he passed away in 1927, and he gave it to me before then, so I kept it. And the diploma is as ascertained by the Huntington Museum's research, it is made of unborn calf skin rather than sheepskin.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Wonder if that was common back then.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're going to ask me something about it?
Well, I'd like to know about it.
Yeah. Well, it's about, I said an overall about me.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
Let's see, William Penn was...
He was, I think he was a brother of my grandfather. They
okay.
were sons of...
So he would have been a great uncle of yours.
Yes,
okay.
That's right.
And he was a preceptor with the...
No, he was on the, I think was on the faculty and a preceptor in 1879-80, we saw in
that. Okay, and that would have been the Medical College of St. Louis.
Yes, it was still Medical College of St. Louis at that time.
Okay. Did their affiliations with what later became the School of Medicine?
Oh, yes. Yes, when you amalgamated, just send the little files here,
uh-huh.
the little pamphlets and stuff. It's in here, the chronological composite organization
right.
from with the Missouri Medical.
Yeah. Did you know all that when you applied for medical school here?
Yes, I've known my grandfather had been at St. Louis
uh-huh.
College of Medicine and all. And no, I determined to be a doctor in 1917 when I was carrying water for the food lunches for the harvest hands and thrashing wheat in Lincoln County, Missouri.
And that's when you decided farming wasn't for you.
Yes, the. Of course, at that time, riding horses, and the hay harvest hands asked me what I was going to do with all the money I was making. Well, I was making a dollar a day. And so I said, well, I wasn't going to work in that hot sun the rest of my life. I wouldn't be a doctor. And I pursued it and had the good fortune to get through Central Methodist College at Fayette, Missouri, in the class of 29, and then I came on here.
What was it like when you got here? What did the place look like?
Well, we have all the pictures of it. It was very...
Had you been to St. Louis before?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So you weren't?
Occasionally, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd had a first cousin to the School of Nursing at Lawrence Hospital, and we'd been down and see her, and I'd been in. And then on my mother's side, they had this colonel, they called him Colonel Paul Brown, who was my grandfather's brother on my mother's side. And he was a trustee of Lawrence Hospital.
Oh.
And he was also on the board of curators at Central Methodist College.
Was he the Paul Brown or the Paul Brown
building? He built the Paul Brown building here in St. Louis, yes. And so he was interested in medical education, but he died in 1927 also before he could see me through.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been a little financially easier getting through if I'd have had him as a sponsor,
yes.
But he did manage to borrow some.
How did you get through? Did you borrow? Or?
Oh, yes, I had to borrow.
Yeah.
And then I was, I guess, one of the first recipients of the Jackson Johnson Student Loan Fund. And I got that for 2 years,
uh-huh.
in 1931, 32, 33. And been keeping with that. I've been the good, had the good fortune to have a little more income than I spent. So in 1977, I started the memorial student loan fund in my name of my wife who was deceased and myself, and I contribute a little to it.
That's great.
We go along in that manner, and I think we can pass on to help other.
I think student loan funds, because I went to college on student loans strictly, is one of the most important things people can do.
So they do. And so I'm contributing at Washington University on the odd years, and at Central Methodist College on the even years. So I treat them equitably.
Yes. So when you graduated then from Washington University,
well,
33, what did you do?
Yeah, I went to St. Louis, City Hospital, St. Louis. And when the Democrats took over in 1934, because I was down there, I had some Republican sponsors, and when Dickman was elected mayor, I went out with with other Republican appointees.
Weren't you doing a residency down there then?
Well, I was just sort of interning, and so I was out. I was a registered Democrat, I had Republican relatives that recommended me there, and so I went out. And with the depression at its worst, I had to go to find a better place to make a living. And so I started to California, and I got to San Francisco. And my wife and I had $7.42 left when we got to San Francisco, so I stopped and went to work. There was really no depression in California like there was in the Midwest at that time. They didn't feel it. I got there on a Thursday and never seen any living person in San Francisco before. And I got there on a Tuesday and never seen a living person there before. And on Thursday I had two jobs.
How did you do it?
Well, guts.
Knocking on doors? Calling up doctors?
That's a long story.
Come on, tell me the story.
That's it. I met one of the former resident of Lincoln County, Missouri, my home, and he told me to go into the hospital, what he knew, one of the superintendents of one of the hospital, and I went to see about if I could get a job as a resident house officer there, and he said no, he didn't have an opening, but he had been the assistant superintendent of one of the other hospitals, and one of their residents had come down with tuberculosis, and he was looking for help. And I went out there, and before I could, when I got back at the apartment from being interviewed and had the job, as soon as I had my credentials forwarded from the City Hospital in Washington University, and so of course he couldn't hire you in California without having documented evidence that you were qualified.
What hospital was that?
It was St. Luke's in San Francisco. And I got back, and there was a call from the first superintendent I went to see. One of the doctors was looking for a lab technician. His lab technician had taken, it was a lady, taking her vacation on the old Luralene to go to Hawaii. And back would take 3 weeks, and he'd need the lab technician. And so I didn't take the residency. I took the lab technician job because it was golden opportunity. Paid $30 a week.
What did the residency pay?
Residency paid $25 a month.
Wow. How could you live on $25 a month?
Well, I lived on $9 a month at the City Hospital here in St. Louis. I've been living on, so when you got $30 a week, it was in the money.
Oh, yeah.
Big money. And by the time that job gets inspired, well, I saw that they had emergency hospitals in San Francisco, and of having worked in the emergency room in both the St. Louis County Hospital and as a student and as a city hospital in St. Louis. I knew a little bit about it, so mm-hmm. I went down to see the director of health. They said that he was had the appointing of the doctors. So I stopped in his, without appointment, I went down and I stopped his secretary in the outer in the desk in his outer office. And he was back through the in his office with the door open.
Yeah.
And I went in and see Dr. Geiger and requested him. The secretary said, "Do I have an appointment?" And I said, "No, but I've got plenty of time. I can wait till Dr. Geiger's free. It's what do you want to talk about?" And I went to medical school. And I said, "Washington University in St. Louis." And she had heard of it, Dr. Geiger, and heard back where he heard of it. In a few minutes, he said, "Miss Murphy sent that young man from St. Louis in here to see me."
Uh-huh.
And we talked a little, and he was the same way. He said, "As soon as you get your credentials from St. Louis," that he could put me on as a relief surgeon, as the surgical jobs were, as full-time jobs were, great demand, and very well-qualified people got it. At that time, they were paying $200 a month. So I worked as a relief surgeon around there for 4 years before I got enough contacts to get a, become a surgeon. And I stayed on then. I went to war for 5 years after war, and I come back.
Where'd you serve in war?
Every theater of war. I went to Navy and took the big Navy ship, the biggest transport that the United States had. You know, from the ship surgeon. Went around, served every, well, carried the troops. We started out carrying about 6,000, and then we expanded it after Pearl Harbor and carried over 8,000 to 8,500 troops overseas and brought back usually from 2,700 to 3,000 wounded coming back.
Yeah, so you were the ship surgeon?
Yes, I was on both with several others, but at first it was only two of us on board.
Did you actually do surgery aboard ship?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yes. We got craniotomies when we had and that was the first craniotomy I ever did aboard ship. But we had to.
Yeah.
And we had people that were broken skulls and breast skulls and fractures and things we had to do on ship. Nobody else.
Yeah, so most of your surgery would be done when you were bringing
a lot of back. A lot of them had had their major surgery on board the hospital ships or in base hospitals, and then mm-hmm. bring them back to various ports in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
In that time, I made on that ship, I was on 22 months, and I made 18 trips south of the equator. In every theater of war, I was almost captured in Singapore. I'm going back to Singapore next Saturday. 14th, I'm going to leave for my first visit in Singapore.
And they won't be on the lookout to capture you now,
will
they?
No, the Japs are going. We were one of the last ships that got out of Singapore. I was still operating with the British.
Mm-hmm.
But I came back in San Francisco. It was wonderful to me. You know? So it was Washington University.
Oh, well, glad to hear it.
Yeah, so
you live in San Francisco now, right?
No, I San Francisco, I don't want to be pessimistic, but it degenerated so in recent years.
And
I was going to sell off my property there in 76. It looked bad to me, and I quit practicing, and I sold the buildings that I had my office in, rental buildings. And eventually, I sold my condominium where I lived. Got out. I bought my living room on the creek. Walnut Creek is actually a little 25 miles from downtown San Francisco, east.
Yeah, well, it's still kind of San Francisco area then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I guess they can much more happy to be back here. See, if first reunion I've come to.
It is.
I've been able to attend.
You must have been too busy then for the 30th or the 40th?
Oh, yeah, something doing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I usually come back to Missouri because I still have a lot of relatives here. I usually come back for the second week end in June, and we had the Penn reunion that time.
Oh.
There's still 15 of us first cousins have been first cousins.
Are they all in the St. Louis area?
No, they're scattered all over, but most of us get here the second week.
Great.
It's been a pleasure to work with the alumni associations in San Francisco.
That's where I've seen your name and your face before.
Yeah,
right.
And the phone-a-thons and things. It's quite an opportunity to benefit the university, and I had the time to go talk on the phone.
What do you think of the medical center these days?
It's overwhelming.
That's true.
Yeah. It's very good, but there's no passing. I was collapsed with a coronary occlusion in Troy, Missouri in June of 81 when I was here. Called Dr. Bouzet. He said, could he find a place for him? Well, he did. Through the good services of Dr. Jaffe and Dr. Bouzet, I've never had a pain, never had any more episodes.
Wonderful.
And I come every year and have my physical and checkup on him. When I was here the day before yesterday, Dr. Jaffe said, I like your cardiogram. It was perfect before he couldn't see. He couldn't believe I ever had a coronary.
Wow.
But I'm still taking his medicine.
Oh, yes. Have to believe him.
Yeah. So we were fine.
Good.
Turn
the thing off?
Yeah.
I will turn the thing off.
I got the load.